how did you connect with Paul Simons, I think is the piano player, and he's a local artist.
What I do when I'm touring is I go online and look for piano players. I particularly look for people with combination of talents. A, they should be able to read music, so that when I send them the music, it's not difficult for us to work together, for him to learn it, him or her to learn it. And the other is I tend to start by looking at jazz pianists, because there are one or two places in the play where some improvisation is needed. Not jazz necessarily, but more in the gospel feel. So there was a scene in the church, which is supposed to be like, you know, the organist playing in the background and with the preacher doing his thing. So that combination. And so I just looked online, and I often see two or three, and Paul just stood out. So I sent emails to a few people hoping that Paul would respond, and he did.
You just mentioned the church and organ music. Is that where Robeson came up?
Yes, his father was actually a minister of a church in Princeton, New Jersey. They were part of the AME Zion, African Methodist Episcopal Church. And so Paul grew up in that church, and I think he always remained a member of AME Church.
Yeah.
And it is said that he remained quite religious throughout his life. That that's probably true. I have heard that some people tell me that they remember seeing him in London, in England, at some garden party, and him being very deep in conversation with somebody they call the Red Bishop about spiritual things, but also Red Bishop in that. And so he was a bishop with social justice concerns, so that was quite a good fit for the two of them.
Which the Black Church has always had, and has been developed in other places historically too.
But interestingly, I've heard Paul Robeson in an interview, a radio interview, saying something that Black churches, Black people, they need to do a lot more than just pray. So I think, and I share this concern, and that is a lot of the time, religious people, Black or otherwise, but specifically, particularly in Black churches worldwide, including Nigeria, where I come from, seem to put a lot more faith on their religion than on personal and group action for social justice. And in fact, Malcolm X, there's another piece that I do, which is not a play, but it's more like a lecture with songs. And there's an extract for the speech of Malcolm X's that I do, saying that the white man has taught us to sing and pray and shout until we die, while that white man has his milk and honey on the streets here on earth. And we are supposed to wait until after we die for our you know, milk and honey. That's not good enough.
Which is the big con.
Exactly. And people buy that too often.
How did you prepare for this role? You wrote the play yourself.
I did, yeah.
And I imagine, did you do some compositions as well?
No, I didn't do any.
You took it all from
him? No. All the songs are songs that he sang. Or in the case of only one, I think, one piece of music in the play he didn't sing, but that was something called "We'll Keep Her Welcome in the Hillsides, We'll Keep Her Welcome in the Dales." This land will... This land will something something when you come home again to Wales. So it is a Welsh hymn which was playing in the background while I was speaking at the American-Canadian border, and he was describing how people in Wales wanted him to come back and sing to them, but he couldn't because his passport was impounded. But all the other songs that I sing and I play are songs that he sang, including some that I don't like personally, or one that I don't like personally, and that's the Ballad for Americans, because it's just overly patriotic without there being enough that much substance to it. It's very idealistic and patriotic, and musically it's okay. But my director, who was also the dramaturg, who sort of helped me write the play, insisted that I sang it, and she was right. I didn't want to.
Did you encounter Robeson first at home in Nigeria or in England?
In England, in Liverpool, mm-hmm. on June 23rd, 1995, at about 6:30 in the morning. Because that was a summer solstice, and there was an event to welcome the dawn, and I'd been asked to sing, and I chose to sing what I thought was an appropriate song, My Lord, What a Morning. And this lady came up to me afterwards and said, "You remind me of Paul Robeson. Do you sing many of his songs?" And I think that might have been the first time I'd heard his name. And just by sheer chance and good luck, 2 months after that, I was in the library in Liverpool looking for a book on civil rights or something. And there was this book, Paul Robeson, the biography. I said, "Oh, that's that guy that woman was talking about." And that was it.
Who was more than a singer.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Why do you think, the play is about that, mm-hmm. and why is it that Robeson got pushed aside? I mean, it's not just that he was called a communist, is it?
Not just that he was called a communist, but he spoke too many uncomfortable truths, I think. And he was pushed aside not just, even by the, as I say in my blurb, the synopsis, that he was pushed aside even by the leaders and mm-hmm. followers of the modern civil rights movement. Because he was associated with communism, and that was seen as unpatriotic, and the black civil rights leaders at the time generally wanted to, if they felt that if they wanted to get what they wanted, if they were to get what they wanted, they had to show that they were true, loyal, patriotic Americans. Mm-hmm. And being associated with somebody like Robeson was not going to help their cause. And then as far as the white establishment was concerned, basically he was just speaking too many truths, and more importantly, I think, showing almost singularly that here was one man, even though he was black, he recognized that the black struggle could not be won by blacks on their own. And that the working class struggle, whites as well, had to have as many allies as possible, both in America and worldwide. Mm-hmm. So being an internationalist was particularly dangerous. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the, that's why he was sidelined. Yeah, silenced.
You and Isaac, when we first met, Isaac Zaney, mentioned the possibility that you were going to talk to a class at the university. Were you able to?
I'm going to do that tomorrow.
Okay. Mm. Because I was going to ask you what the reaction of the students were and that kind of stuff, yeah.
Well, I can tell you what the reaction of the students were in a similar occasion. This was in Charlotte, North Carolina, about 2-3 years ago, 2 years ago. And basically, I started by saying, "Has anybody heard of Paul Robeson?" And this was, I think at least half of them were black students.
And in Carolina too.
Yes, North Carolina, yes. And not one of them had, which didn't surprise me. I have been in places. I remember being in Dearborn, Michigan, where there was some kind of big labor event, national labor event, and I did their presentation. There was some mix-ups and so on. So a lot of people. Anyway, afterwards, I went to this group of trade unionists. There were four or five, and they were black, maybe about my age. I said, I'm sorry you missed something I did about Paul Robeson. Who's Paul Robeson? So this is a black, middle-aged man who is in the labor unions, didn't know about Paul Robeson. That is the success with which he has been buried.
I find that scary, yeah. Both as an American,
yeah.
Also as a father of a black child.
Right.
That people get, such important people get,
yes,
erased.
That's
the
right.
Ancestors are forgotten.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And that's, so when I actually first read the biography, I mean, I'm as guilty as anybody else of my ignorance. So I just thought, well, this is bad. Not only should I be ashamed of myself, but I've got to do something about it. So I was inspired by his life to just tell his story. So his signature song is Old Man River.
Yeah.
But I start the very first word that comes out of my mouth when I start officially is I sing the opening of Old Man River with the original word, original lyrics, which started with the N-word, which he sang in 1928. Because that's what, you know, that was the very beginning of his career. He was a very young man. He was given this great job.
Yeah.
And maybe that word was not so easy to challenge in those days.
Mm-hmm.
So I start the play with that, and then, you know, stop it after two or three lines. And I've invented I came up with the suggestion that his wife tells him off for singing those words. But I do that to tell the story that even great a man as Paul Robeson became, he also started from a position of relative naivety and innocence and ignorance.
Mm-hmm. And internalized oppression.
Yes. But he grew in stature and intellect to become a great man.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, ignorance is no excuse. Once you've given information, the question is what you do with it, and what do you put it to use for yourself or for society. And that's what he did. That's what I'd like to think that I do with the play. Because I feel that in just by telling Paul Robeson's story, there's so much education in there on all sorts of things, from African history to, you know, even pre-slavery, yeah, African history, to Welsh history, to socialism, to, you know, war with the Soviet Union and all that.
Yeah.
And then at the very end, I deliberately bring in the fact that after this epic life has been lived, then we now start to hear about these young fellows called Martin Luther King and Malcolm X. And I also mentioned Nelson Mandela at the end of Paul Robeson's life, after he has achieved all this, and saying, well, he went before and other people went before him, but he acknowledged them, but not enough of the current and recent heroes acknowledged him, and he certainly not mentioned I don't think his name has ever escaped the lips of Barack Obama. In public, anyway.
Where else are you taking this play in the future?
Well, I go back to England tomorrow night, and I've got... So all my future performances that are confirmed are in the UK up until January next year. And that includes a four-week run in a small theatre, even smaller than this, but it's in the West End. And I've built up a festival around it. And I call it the Paul Robeson Art is a Weapon Festival. And I've got a series of speakers and other performers to just occupy this place for the month of October. Mm-hmm. And that's my most ambitious thing to date.
Cool. And as a final question, what did you think of the space here at the bus stop theater? It's a very small, intimate space.
It's a very intimate space. It's a very nice space, actually. And I have a lot of praise for Matt, the technician. He was very good. And it's actually better than I was expecting from a so-called fringe venue.